Welcome to The Chalene Show. Chalene has helped thousands with her books, seminars, and online academies. She's the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Push, and a mother of two.
Yo, what's up? I'm so happy you're here. Listen, I know I usually cut up a little bit, try to keep things light and funny and sarcastic, but I need you to know that today's show is pretty serious. It's real, and it's a topic that affects way too many of us, way too many people who I love, way too many of my listeners, and we just have got to remove the stigma and the shame if this cycle is ever going to end, and it will, it must, it has to. If you can hear my voice today, you, my friend, are a survivor. Your track record is 100%. You've survived everything that's happened to you. Even the stuff that shouldn't have happened to you as a child, that was not your fault. You've survived it. But today's show isn't just about surviving. It's about being a champion, a warrior, and reclaiming your greatness. Today, I'm speaking with Steve Lepore. He's the executive director of oneinsix.org. One in six of the men you know are, in fact, survivors of sexual abuse. And it's said that one in three women have been sexually abused in their lifetimes. Yet in today's show, we're going to focus on the guys, the boys, the dudes who we love, so that we can better understand how to reach out, how to help them ask for help, how to understand how beautiful your life could be, how amazing you could feel if you could just free yourself from the secret, the shame that's not yours to carry. And where to start, where to go, how to get help, how to help somebody who you just suspect there's something isn't right. And maybe everyone else sees someone who's short-tempered and angry and defensive, but you see someone who's in pain, someone who's hurting, and you love them enough to want to learn more yourself so that you can let someone know that no matter what's happened, nothing is going to change the way you feel about them, that you love them unconditionally, that you will be there for them, that they can be themselves, that they can open up, that they can trust that you're not going to leave them or shame them or blame them, but instead that you will walk with them through their journey of healing. And maybe this message is for you. Maybe, just maybe, it's you who needed to hear this message today. My lifers, I love you. And to those of you who are survivors, this show is dedicated to you. Steve, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So the first thing I have to ask you is the name of your organization is One in Six. And I explained to our listeners just before we started what that number represents. But I want to ask you, because you're in it, how accurate do you think that number is?
It's probably not correct in that it's greater. The actual number would be greater. But in terms of research, that's the closest that we can get. And the reason I say that it's probably not accurate is that the issue is highly underreported for men. It's probably underreported for women and children as well. But for men, it's a highly underreported crime that's been committed and issue in an individual's life.
So does that one in six, does that represent the number of reported acts?
Yes, as oh best as we
gosh.
Can tell.
Oh my gosh.
So it's 19 million adult men in the United States
that's,
have suffered.
That means like reported to an actual agency.
Or to an individual who may have had the opportunity to be involved in the collection of data. So that doesn't mean that there's been one in six cases opened in terms of criminal activity that's being investigated. This is just the best that we've got. There's a whole page on our website that talks about the statistic and it cites the different studies that have been done. So reporting could have been in a study. It could have been reported to law enforcement, what have you. That's the best we've got. It's probably low.
It's got to be. I mean, it's just got to be, especially
no
with the community that you serve. And this is a message everyone needs to hear. If you have men in your life, if you have children, if you have other people that you care about, this is a message for everyone to hear. And I just want to say before we go much further that we might talk about some things that stir up emotion in people and to just know that we're going to talk about some pretty sensitive issues. So take care of yourself. And we're going to offer some resources at the end of this program. Please promise me that you'll stay tuned and take advantage of those. I want to start by saying that we have people listening who may themselves be survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And we have people listening who may be married to or in a relationship with someone who is a survivor. And there may be those listening who they just aren't ready yet to identify themselves as survivors. So I think this is a really important message. And even for those of us who are parents and want to just be aware. Because, you know, I watched an interview with you, Steve, and one of the things I heard you say is that it's your mission to have survivors really come to grips with this earlier in their journey. So what can you tell me about when on average, and you know, let's just talk about men right now.
Sure.
At what age does the average man say, this is something I have to deal with?
Late 30s to late 40s is the average. That's the window. But let's roll the tape back really quickly. I want to thank you for the sensitivity that you have to the issue in reminding your listeners that if there is something that's stirred up, it could be personal, it could be tangential, it could be somebody that they know and care about. It's very important to, but I'm grateful to you for your sensitivity to that, because it's not uncommon for someone to say they saw a TV show, they saw an advertisement or a public service announcement, or they heard something on the radio. And that was the beginning of their journey. The average age for a man is, as I say, late 30s to late 40s. And one of the underpinnings of our mission is to try and lower that age. So it would be great if men who were in their late teens to their mid to late 20s began to work on this. What we hypothesize, and we think that we're pretty close to being accurate and dead on, is that the earlier that a man will work on this, the sooner that they can reclaim their lives, live a more healthy and complete life, and mitigate a lot of the damage that can be done should a guy have this in their history and just not deal with it.
Why do you think it takes so long? Why 30s and 40s?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons, and in the work that we've done to try and understand better and then how to do awareness and engagement with younger men is younger guys are just not thinking about anything other than, I got to get through school, or I really need to start my career, or I'm interested in a relationship. And they don't think that maybe what happened to them as a young person, as a boy, could affect all of those things. And then the other reality is the masculine code. The way that we as men are hardwired and the way that our culture speaks to and about men, even as little boys. And I could ask you the question, you'll answer it because it's universal, but what do we tell little boys?
Be tough, don't cry.
Be tough, don't cry. If I ask that question 1,000 times, I get that answer 1,000 times.
Wow.
So as a little boy is raised to say or to learn not to cry or to be tough, to pull yourselves up by your bootstrings, well, by the time they're 18, 19, 20, they've sort of bought into that. And what's happened to them is difficult to process. It's confusing, to be sure. It's hurtful. It's painful. But boys don't cry. Men don't cry. And so they enter young adulthood and adulthood sort of having bought that and processing it that way. And a lot of times guys wait until an event or until they have said enough is enough. I've moved from one job to the next too many times, or I can't maintain a relationship, or I'm struggling with this issue or that issue. So,
and how often is that? You said it's often when they're struggling with an event. How often is that addiction?
Oh, there's no question that addiction, great question. There's on your part, there's no question that addiction of all kinds are fueled by what happened to a man as a child. Now, it's not to say that every man that's suffering with an addiction suffered childhood sexual abuse, but that is a key marker in the lives of men who are struggling. They're trying to numb any number of things, including, and in many cases, beginning with having been abused sexually as a little boy.
What other ways does this manifest itself in adult lives?
Well, unhealthy ways is, a guy could be a workaholic. A guy could take on dangerous activities in terms of their employment. On occasion, I don't know if you want to go too far down this road, but on occasion, this issue could manifest itself in a man becoming violent towards other people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a myth, and the myth says that if you were abused, you will abuse. That is a myth. That's not indeed true. The reality is that for most guys who were abused, they abhor what happened to them and would never, ever consider perpetrating violence against another person. But that indeed is part of what a guy has to deal with. So they set themselves up to not want to think about, not want to talk about or deal with the issue. And the way to numb it or hold it at bay is to engage in, you know, intense activities, activities that are unhealthy, to be sure. Mm. And in some cases, activities that outwardly appear to be very healthy, but still are holding them at bay in terms of dealing with the issue. The workaholic, you know, the president of the company, and that obviously not all presidents of companies suffered this, but some have, perhaps many have.
Yeah. You know, I've had this conversation and you and I have just met, but I mean, in my life, I know a lot of professional athletes and a lot of male professional athletes who have survived sexual abuse as a child.
Indeed.
And because that happened as a kid, they were able to drown out and just pretend this never happened by just focusing like a drug on their sport. And that sure. That's how they become the elite, you know, 1% of 1% of 1%, because that became their addiction, how they could validate that I am worthy. I'm not a throwaway person. Maybe this didn't happen. And I would be, gosh, I wish more professional athletes would just come forward and bring awareness to it.
Well, what's happening is professional athletes, celebrities of all different kinds are beginning to. So the dialogue that we're having now is an opening to folks being willing to say, you know what, I think I want to talk about this. So one athlete who has been involved in our work, who's been public, he writes about it actually, is R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey is a Cy Young pitcher in the major leagues, pitched for the Mets for quite some time. Now he's up in Canada pitching for the Blue Jays. And he finally said enough is enough. He wrote a book about it and he speaks publicly on it. Now, the important thing is to understand that what happened to him doesn't define him. He's a world-class athlete. He is a Cy Young Award winner. He's a dad and a husband. And oh, by the way, he suffered childhood sexual abuse.
Right.
But he was able to get his bearings and to say, all right, I'm going to speak about this. And I think more and more people are beginning to say, you know what, I'm going to speak about this. And then our caution to anyone, whether they're an athlete or whether they're, you know, a college student on campus trying to figure out how to juggle all of the schoolwork that they have, be patient. Be thoughtful in the process of as you begin to process. Have a safety net in place. I would never suggest that someone start speaking their truth, if you will, until they've got things in place that are going to help them get through this. R.A. Dickey didn't write a book just because he had some extra time.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because one thing I've noticed is there is a resurgence of people feeling empowered by sharing their story. And especially in what I do, I mean, your story is what attracts people to you. It's what motivates people or inspires them, or it allows them to hear your story and see that you're a real person and connect with you.
Indeed.
I think the challenge or the
caution.
The caution, yes, would be that I just don't think you can tell, or should you tell a story until you've really processed it and that you have healed, at least to some extent, so that the story isn't raw. The story doesn't, you know, leave people hanging with this, you know, feeling that you're still dealing with it and you're still in the middle of it. And so I have to just say this because I've been at too many seminars and hosted seminars myself where someone will stand up, grab the mic, and for the very first time in their whole life, they will share what happened to them, which is so incredibly brave.
Yep.
But at the same time, I'm just, is that the right place?
Well, it's incredibly brave, but it's potentially really dangerous. And so what you want to do is honor the place that this person has come where they finally have said, you know what, I'm ready to start talking about it. But then to encourage them to understand all of the different options, all of the possibilities. What if you tell somebody publicly and they don't believe you? How are you going to process that?
Yeah.
What if you tell somebody publicly and you're made fun of, or you're challenged? Or so what we always tell folks is that it's very important to begin to reclaim your life by being able to tell your story, but do so in a thoughtful way, in a very patient and paced way. Do so with support in place. Are you in therapy? Are you in a support group? Have you taken care of yourself so that as you begin to go public, and it's not 0 to 60, it's 0 to 5. It's 0 to 15.
Well, if we've got people listening to this point in our interview today. I want to be very, very specific. So let's assume you're listening and this has stirred up some really uncomfortable, unpleasant thoughts that you've been trying to push down for many, many years. And you can feel it. You can feel it inside of you welling up.
Yes.
What do you tell them is, what can they do today? What today can that person do? And then what can they do 2 days later and a week later?
Yeah, you know, we want to honor those people who are having those feelings, who are beginning to have thoughts. We want to thank them for whatever it is that's going on inside of them that's saying, you know what, I'm ready now. I need to talk. I need to think about this. I need to process this. We want to honor that. We want to encourage and caution them to be patient. What I would suggest is that male or female, they go to our website and nose around. There's three entry portals, one for individuals and primarily for men. It's gender-based. Our work is for men or those that identify as being male. But we get a lot of info at emails back to us from women who said, you know what, the content, the text on your website spoke to me. And not
universal.
As a loved person, a person that loves a survivor, but for somebody who indeed survived themselves. So male or female, go to the website and spend whatever time it takes to begin to get comfortable with what the process might look like for you. It's different for all of us. And then, you know, there's a library. You can check a book or two out if you'd like to read about it. There's a support line where you can go and it's live. It's chat-based 24/7. And you can put your toe in the water that way and begin to talk to somebody about what you're feeling, what you think might have happened. You know, what we would say is that we believe you. We honor you. We're grateful for you. Is there a way that we can help you? And again, I want to be very careful. Our work is with adult men. If it happens to be a woman who comes forward, we'll find a way to point them in the direction of services that are suitable for what they're dealing with. But what we always preach is patience and pace.
Mm-hmm.
And we would never want to discourage someone on the other hand of saying, well, you're not quite ready. So, you know, get back to this. If they know they're ready, if they know that they're beginning to have something percolate inside of them that says, all right, enough is enough. I think this happened. I'd like to deal with this and so forth. Then it's important for them to begin to move in that direction.
How useful have you found therapy to be for survivors?
Incredibly useful, both individual therapy, group therapy, whatever a person can afford, can get themselves into. You know, and I'm keenly aware that I'm privileged. I have the opportunity to be in therapy and to go to group. That's not something that everybody has the privilege to do. But if you can find a way, I think it's very, very important.
I'm very privileged to have amazingly beautiful people in my life who have shared their stories with me and their journey of surviving. And almost every one of them, both male and female, without fail, didn't tell anyone, like you said, until their 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
And therapy was such an integral part of their recovery, mm-hmm. and becoming who they were meant to be.
Indeed.
And I can say that every single one of them has better relationships and people who really embrace them and love them. And they're happier people because they don't carry the secret with them anymore. So I just want people to know that, gosh, I love you so much, and people will love you more. Even though it's scary to think about, you just have to believe that, you know, that moment of vulnerability often brings us so much closeness in our most important relationships.
Oh, indeed. We talk to so many guys whose lives are fear-based, and not that they're fearful individuals in their employment or what have you, but they're afraid that if anybody knew what happened to them. And we speak about this often publicly. It's not uncommon for a guy to say, well, you know what, I got up every morning and I put on two sport coats. I put on the support coat of fear, and I put on the sport coat of shame. And that's what I wore through the day. That was the lens that I saw my life through. And the idea is to take those off, to take off the coat or the jacket of fear and of shame, of guilt. And once that happens, you're exactly right. They're able to engage more deeply with their partners, with their children, with their employees and employers, their neighbors. And it's very frightening. It's uncharted waters. It's very, very difficult for men especially to say, all right, well, you know what? I'm not really sure how to do this, or I'm not certain what the roadmap ahead is going to look like. And that's why I say, if we would just engage with men and say, we believe you, we honor you, how may we help you? I'm willing to stand with you and be patient. I'm willing to be there when things don't look the way you'd like for them to. And when things do, we'll celebrate. But it's just to engage and to come alongside of a guy that we have found really works wonders. And sometimes that starts with therapy. Sometimes that starts in group.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what we know is that a guy will go to see a therapist for an issue. For the presenting issue might not be that, oh, by the way, I think I might have been abused as a little boy. It might be that,
right,
I've got a problem with alcohol or drugs. I've got a problem with a sex addiction. I've got a problem with not being able to hold a job or whatever it is. So it's the presenting issue that's one thing. But if you follow that trail back, it starts with having been abused as a little boy.
So true. So true. And I assume it looks different for a man versus a woman as an adult. I mean, again, I can only go from my own personal experiences, but of the men I know in my life who've shared with me this journey, seeing a transition from someone who was either really irritable and angry and quick to jump to defend themselves and super intense and almost like an addictive type personalities, you know, like you said, whether it's work or sports or gambling or whatever. And then with the women, I've noticed it tends to be a devaluing, like a quieter, instead of like snapping and defending themselves, they kind of let people trample all over them. I get tons of letters from people who their addiction to food, really,
yes,
they've traced it back to.
Indeed.
So how is it different for men and women who are survivors?
Well, I mean, one of the things to remember is that there are many things that are the same, but there are some things that are just so obviously different. And part of it is men just don't talk a lot about this kind of stuff. So I'm willing to come over and hang out and have a beer with you if you drink beer and shoot pool and watch a game or whatever, but I'm not going to talk to you about the fears I've got or the pain I'm suffering or what have you. We often talk publicly about the way that men process. If you get guys in a group, unless they're being moderated and unless the group's being facilitated, a lot of times they'll talk about anything but the thing that's the most important to them, or they won't talk at all.
My husband ran into a friend of ours who we had heard he and his wife had separated, and they spent some time talking. And I said, so, you know, how are things between he and his wife? He goes, I don't know. We don't talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God.
Perfect. The other reality is that pull aside any man that you know and talk to the last time that they were lost when they were driving from point A to point B. And what did that guy do? 99 out of 100 of them kept driving.
Yep.
Because they know that that exit's one more mile ahead.
Yeah.
As opposed to pulling over and saying, I'm lost. I need directions.
What a great analogy.
And that's the reality of the world that many men live in. They feel lost, but they're not willing or not able to ask for direction or for help. So there's a pretty quick difference right there.
What would that conversation sound like if my partner is a lot of these things? He's irritable, he's distant, struggling with addiction, just struggling. And I suspect that there's something deeper there. And I don't know if it's sexual abuse, but I'm the partner and I suspect that there's something deeper there. How do you start that conversation?
Gosh, I tell you, it's that's a question we get constantly. There will be a line of people that will line up to speak with us after we've given a presentation. And it's often the exact same question that you just posed. And I'm often careful to say that everybody's different. Mm. And I don't know the depth of a relationship that a wife might have with her husband or a parent with their child. So it really depends on how deep and how trusting and how open and honest that is. But I think it's perfectly fine to just say, is there something that you would like to talk about? I love you dearly. And I notice that you're more irritable, or you're drinking too much, or you seem distant, or you seem troubled or nervous or frightened or whatever the case might be. But to create an environment where the guy feels safe, and then to not expect a whole paragraph, maybe all you're going to get is three words or a sentence.
Mm.
But then stay open, stay available. And then the next time that man wants to talk, maybe you'll get the paragraph, maybe you'll get two or three pages. And then all of a sudden, when that level of trust is where it needs to be, and it's not to say that a man doesn't necessarily trust those people that he's intimate with, but trust on this issue sometimes takes a lot of time. I can tell you a story anecdotally where a young guy, late 20s, early 30s, who I knew personally, married, GQ, good looks, beautiful child. He knew what I did for a living, and he said all he could do was look at me and say, I'm 1 in 6. That was it. He could get out those words and nothing more. And I said, would you like to talk about it? And he said, I really would. Wow. So we went to have lunch, and we sat across the table from each other, and he could not string a sentence together.
Mm.
He couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? Would it help you if I told you my story? And I couldn't finish it before he started talking.
Wow.
But what he needed was a safe place where he understood he's not going to be judged. I'm not going to tell him that he needs to finish up in a certain amount of time or that everything will be okay. It might not be. It might be difficult and tough for a while. But what he needed was the opportunity to, in his own time, in his own words, tell his story. And in the very beginning, all he could say was, I'm 1 in 6.
Wow.
And then he took the time that it needed for him to process it, and he was able to tell his story, and he was able to go on and get help. And
how is he today?
He's terrific. It's unbelievable. And you know what? It affects in his life and in so many other men's lives, it affects so many different things. The way he is with his children, his wife, the way he was at work is different. It's not to say that, you know, the curtain came up and everything is wonderful, but he knows now why things short-circuited early on for him. And now he's able to say, okay, well, let me work on that. That, you know, here's the other reality, that what happened to men, 19 million of us in the U.S., happened to us. It does not define us, or it doesn't have to. And we are not what happened to us. You know, we run organizations, we are athletes, we sing in choirs, we surf. All of those things. It's really great to listen to Greg LeMond. He's a world champion cyclist. He's won the Tour de France 3 times. He sits on our board. He's a survivor of childhood sexual abuse.
I didn't know that. That's so awesome.
It is the truth, but it's so far down the list of his accomplishments.
Right.
It doesn't define him. And when we first started talking to him, it was clear, both on our part and on his part, he's not the poster boy for men who are abused as children. He's a world champion cyclist, and he's a dad, and he's a husband. And oh, by the way, he suffered childhood sexual abuse and has overcome it.
Wow. You know, I guess the next thing I'd have to ask you, is there a wrong way to respond if somebody feels comfortable enough? And because, you know, it can come from left field. You never know. I myself have been just almost caught off guard and surprised when someone shared those details with me. And I wondered, is there a wrong thing to say, or a better way to respond, I should say?
Well, there is a wrong thing to say. What if somebody finally has got what it takes to begin to talk about it, and they're questioned? Mm. Well, did that really happen? Are you
really
sure?
Really? Somebody would do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Could I pinch their head off?
Absolutely. Or get over it. How many times have I heard that men were told, and many times by their dads, or by other adult male figures, get over it. It's no big deal. It'll pass. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
And so what happens is that guy recoils, and it may be that he never comes back to say, I need to begin to work on this. So an openness, an honestness, a willingness to create a safe place, to believe what that man has said, to not rush, to allow them to process it completely, to find help for them. You know, to not overpromise or to say anything that you can't deliver on.
I want people to imagine, people are listening right now, and you tend to tune these things out when it's painful. But I'm hoping that you've been listening in the background and you've tuned back in for a second, because I want you to hear this. Steve, what's possible? How could life be different on the other side of this after you get help?
Oh my goodness, I can't tell you what's possible is to live a full and complete and happy life. And happy doesn't mean that your life doesn't have difficulties or illness or other issues, but it allows you to come at your life with another perspective. The lens mm-hmm. through which you see life now is one of hopefulness, is one of great joy. And joy, again, isn't void of difficult times or a job that you might lose or a relationship that's broken, but it allows you to process your life and to live your life completely differently.
Wow.
And I can't tell you, there's tens of thousands of men who have reclaimed their lives, who are grateful for the opportunity. I heard the most amazing thing the other day. I was talking to a young fellow who's producing a movie on his life. And we've talked now for the better part of a year since he's launched the effort. And in summary and in paraphrasing, he said, I am so grateful for my life. Mm. That includes what happened to him as a little boy.
Wow.
Now, he wouldn't wish it on his worst enemy, but he is so grateful for his life.
I have a colleague who described for me what it was like before and after. And he said, it's hard to explain, but I was forever busy, constantly ping-ponging all my life. This thought of one incident every single day, every single moment, every single, you know, waking moment, I was ping-ponging this idea out of my mind. So I couldn't see colors. I couldn't take in joy. Yeah. He said it was a full-time job thinking about, trying not to think about it, and worrying at any moment that he would be exposed, that people would know. And so I want to be clear on that as well. Getting help doesn't necessarily mean that you're going public. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the lion's share of folks that are getting help are doing so privately, within their own families, through therapy. Or the cool thing about our website, and we, you know, thank goodness for those folks who've been involved with us from the very beginning, we pay a high, high dividend on anonymity, privacy, security. So we don't track IP addresses. Everything is done in aggregate. So someone can come to our site and not have to register, not have to belong or join. And so a lot of guys have said, I'm so grateful for that because I wasn't ready to talk to anybody about this, but I was ready to begin to do work on it privately and on my own. Mm. So absolutely. Most of these journeys begin privately and within ourselves, and then, you know, public doesn't mean that an article's written or that they speak about it at their church or in front of their men's group or what have you. It might just be that they're now public about it with their partner.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that feels, I think, safe. I hope people feel that if nothing else, your message has been it's so individual and you just make it work for them. And this is a safe place to go. Steve, I can't thank you enough for the work that you do. You're saving lives. You're healing lives.
Our pleasure, indeed.
Is there a place where you take donations on the website?
There's a little donate button in the top right-hand corner of our website. In fact, there's a banner on the very top that says, hey, thanks for helping us. Guys can get help here for free because of generous individuals like you. So that would be awesome.
Well, Steve, I'm going to donate $1,000.
Oh, my word.
And I am going to challenge my listeners to do the same.
I just got a serious chill. Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing work that you're doing. I'm going to challenge my listeners to do the same. I'll provide a link in the show notes. I'll try to, maybe I can even put together one of those text links. You can go directly to the website. Learn more. And at the end of the show, I'm going to provide you with additional resources. Male or female, because indeed. You just the greatness you, there's freedom available to you. A life that you can't even imagine is waiting for you. You don't have to carry this, but it does start with the courage to get help. And there's help out there. So Steve, thank you for what you do.
Oh, our pleasure.
Wow. I've had lots of people on this show who are millionaires or have made tons of money and done really cool things, and they've got celebrity in books and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? By my definition, someone like Steve is what I call a hero, an everyday hero. Someone who's just quietly making it possible for others to live the life that they deserve, to break free from shame that doesn't belong to you. It's not yours to carry. It wasn't your fault. Children don't have sexual desires. You have to understand that. And I think the more we learn about this, the more we talk about it, the more we remove the stigma and just realize that there is no shame in this other than that which belongs to the perpetrator. But if you yourself are a survivor, you in my book are a flippin' hero. Like I can't even describe how much admiration I have for people like Steve and people like Lewis Howes and others I've had on the show who have shared that they themselves are survivors. Like that is so frickin' courageous and cool. And nothing makes a person more real, more vulnerable, more likable than being honest and being vulnerable and saying, yeah, this like wasn't my fault. And I've had to survive it, and now I'm conquering it. Steve, you are the man, and what you're doing at 1in6.org is God's work. If you yourself have been triggered by this episode, if it stirred up some kind of disturbance in you, if you felt like really upset or you're having flashbacks or even those memories where you keep questioning, like, did this really happen? I don't know if this happened, or you know it happened, you just keep trying to push it down and tell yourself, I'm past it. It doesn't affect me today. I'm over it. If it brought up a disturbance in you, can I ask you to care enough about yourself and care enough about the people who are in your life to just look into this, look into finding out if there's something more you could do to help process what happened. Put it in its proper place. Free yourself of the secret. That doesn't mean, like Steve said, you've got to write an article or call a news conference. No, it's just about freeing yourself of this painful secret that keeps your brain so busy trying to compartmentalize it. I made that donation, you know, I hadn't thought about it. I didn't do that as a publicity stunt. I did that because I honestly, truly believe this is God's work. And these are children we're talking about who had to suffer this. And then think about the fact that he said people don't even come to grips with this until they're in their 30s and 40s. That's just too many men, too many boys, too many dudes who are living a life still prisoners of their perpetrator. No more. So I want you to go to 1n6.org and make a donation. I've never done this before in the show. This is one of those areas that people just don't donate to organizations like this. Americans are great. We're so generous. We'll donate to this cause and that cause and causes overseas. But it is so difficult for organizations like 1in6 to get people to donate because they're afraid that the stigma is going to be attached to them because of the donation. And that's why I did that publicly. I didn't do that because I wanted to, you know, make anyone else feel like they had to make a contribution of that size. And I don't normally do those kind of things. The donations and the charitable work that Brett and I do, it's meant to be in private. We don't do that for publicity. But I did it today in the show because I want other people to do that too. I also want you to go to my show notes because we've included links and resources for you to check out. If this has stirred something in you, please, please don't let it just sit inside. Don't push it down for another month, another year, another decade. Just do a little research. I promise you the sky will become bluer, your life becomes better, and you can free yourself of the secret. Lifers, I love you. I love you so much. Nothing could ever change that. You are the bomb.com. Oh, and by the way, my apologies. Oh my gosh, for everyone who tried to go to our show notes and find my grocery list. What a nightmare that created. Nonetheless, it's available to you and I've made it really easy. Now you don't even have to find it on my show notes. It'll come directly to your phone. So if you've already saved that number in your phone, you already know it. In case you haven't, write this down. It's the number that I always plan to use for the Chalene Show. It's 949-565-4337. Again, 949-565-4337. And if you text the word groceries, plural, G-R-O, I should not be spelling this without writing it down. Are you like that? If you text the word groceries to that number, then I'll send you my Excel form shopping list, the list that I use for my family when we go grocery shopping. Now, okay, disclaimer. I have two teenagers, and there's usually about five extra random teenagers around my home. So don't judge, y'all. It's just our grocery list. It's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of it. But there are some things on there that you're going to be like, oh, look at this. Shalene eats waffles or whatever. I have a football player who I have to keep weight on his bones. There's a lot of food on there. Y'all, you get to customize it yourself. It's just an Excel document, but everything's listed so you can see all the different categories. The reason why I put this out there is not so you can eat all the foods that I eat, but so that it can save you time every time you go grocery shopping. So anyways, you'll see it. Check it out. You can modify it for your own taste, likes, and wherever it is you shop. That number again, 949-565-4337. My apologies for the confusion and getting that to you on our show notes. We got it all worked out now. And that's all. Thanks for tuning in. I love you. I mean it. See you soon.